welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. We're recording this on Thursday, November 20th, 2014. Excuse me, just a little bit after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is here again this week. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Did you have fun in Chicago?
I was cold.
But you got out before, like, the whole country, before everything got really super cold, right?
Well, let's put it this way. I flew in on Wednesday, and I got there. I think my flight landed sometime before 3 o'clock, and I was back on a plane the next day by at 4.
So you got in and out real fast, and then everything, the whole country basically got, yes, Alex?
When you finish, can I start a game to play?
Yes, when I'm finished, you can start a game.
Look.
It's a lollipop.
Is it mine?
I would guess that it probably is.
If it's purple?
Yes. Okay, bye. Where was I?
I don't know. What the hell are we talking about?
You came in and out of Chicago before the entire country got swallowed by another polar vortex.
By the way, I had this thing. You know what? We'll get to the topics. I'm going to mention something because I just reminded, you know, because you mentioned about one of the subjects. But let's go ahead. I was in Chicago. I actually tried to see our ex-schoolmate Jay, but since I was there so short amount of time, it was a day he just couldn't get away from, you know, family, you know, taking care of kids and stuff or whatever, yeah. You know, the usual stuff, having to take I believe he had to take his son to basketball practice or something. Mm-hmm. He was trying to figure out, but it just, he just couldn't do it. Just too short. So anyway.
Well, you know, when you fly in and out that quick, you can't really expect to do much like that. You have to be there a few days.
No. Yeah, it's just I just you know, on these business trips now, I just try to avoid staying anywhere for way too long. I just, you know what? As soon as I'm done, I took my suitcase to the office, and after we met with the customer and stuff or whatever, right afterwards, I just freaking just headed to the airport.
One more thing, Alex.
You know what?
What?
I'm going to college.
Well, why don't you take it downstairs?
He wants to know if we can sit quietly.
If you sit quietly, you can color. Okay, so anyway, you're trying to make business trips quick.
Oh, yeah. That's just, I don't want to stay around.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
I'm not going on vacation. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's not like I don't have anybody there with me. I mean, you know, look. How many more restaurants, buildings, towns, whatever? I mean, I you know what? I'm there. I'm done. I'm back on a plane. I'm out. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different kind of a trip than a vacation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. If I'm on a vacation, it's another story, you know?
Anyway. We've got three real topics for today. We're going to talk about the streaming music biz, or I guess just the music biz in general, and what's going on and how it's changing and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk immigration because it hasn't happened yet at the time that we're recording this, and maybe it will have by the time I get this episode out. But Obama's making a big announcement on what he's doing with immigration, and there's all kinds of talk about that. And then we've had Uber has had, you know, a really bad week in terms of PR.
Well, and let's
so
just
we'll
say,
talk about that too.
By the way, and you know, it brings to mind a topic that I had that I was going to write it down earlier and talk about this. And talking about Uber. Mm-hmm. Is Uber really a tech company?
It's partially a tech company. They're actually positioning themselves somewhat as a logistics company.
But you see, this, I think, but the reason why I bring that up is because there a lot of stuff that's been happening in the tech, it's this, that were called like Silicon Valley, and people call the tech sector, that I was thinking about it today. I mean, you know, does Uber really code its own stuff, or they just hire people?
I believe they do.
They do? Mm.
But, okay. You know, the thing is, you know, whether or not they code their own app, you know, they're fundamentally about transportation.
That's my point. And it's not really a tech company. I mean, you know what? I mean, if I use that analogy, look, 30, 40 years ago, like Pan Am and American Airlines created the first, you know, computerized reservation systems. Did that make them freaking tech companies? No. There were airline companies that happened to use technology in order to make their service better. But for some reason, we keep focusing more right now on things like Uber and all. I don't know. Anyway, so that was just something that I thought that was just an interesting thing.
Well, I mean, we might as well jump in and start talking about this a little bit. I mean, I think the key to some of those in that classification is, do they view the tech part of things as sort of a core critical part of their business, that is, you know, you couldn't have the company without it. Now, but the reality is, and you're very right here, there's practically no business you can talk about on this planet at this point that doesn't have a very serious technological dependency.
Absolutely.
Now, the difference is, you know, are you a company that, you know, really views yourself as, hey, I'm providing this service and that's my business and technology is just a means to that end? Or do you see the sort of developing the technology as sort of so integrally intertwined that it's meaningless to talk about the company without concentrating on that? And I guess it has to do with how you allocate your resources and everything else like that.
I think my thing is that, you know what, I see it a little bit differently. Are you creating technology as a platform, or are you creating technology to serve a purpose of you doing a business that is your primary revenue driver? Because, you know what, reselling the technology is not their primary core business.
Well, although really, they have been talking about that direction in terms of the...
Now, if that's the case...
A lot of what they talk about is how the infrastructure they're building for this ride-sharing thing is something they'll be able to repurpose for all kinds of other transportation logistics.
Okay, could I tell you, that when American Airlines built Sabre and all those, they resold that to all other transportation companies too?
Yeah.
Is that American Airlines a tech company?
Well, and I'd say...
Now, they spun it off later, by the way, but still, at the time, I mean, they were the back end for almost, you know, like 50% of the airlines in the world. They resold that technology, and that was like a primary core business. I don't know why now we're looking at this so differently than from then. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a lot of the same stuff to it, but people see Uber as a... I think people see it as a tech company.
Well, because the primary face of the business is their app.
It's a tech app. That's true. Now, that is true. And that is a very different thing.
Of course, you could argue that the primary face may be the app, but it's also the drivers that come pick you up and the experience in the car.
Right. Correct.
But I think their argument is that, you know, they're...
But almost everything now, the front end is an app. What is it that we don't do, like right now, that the front end isn't a website, an app, or, you know, whether it's your bank,
you do your banking, you do your shopping, you do your
right.
You were mentioning travel. You do all your travel booking. You know, you're right. All of this comes through the web. But I think, you know, even if you look at like travel sites and stuff like that, you know, there are some. If you look at like a Kayak or something, they're more clearly positioned as, you know, we're a website that happens to provide travel, as opposed to we're a travel company that happens to have a website.
Right. No, I hear you that, but I guess there's a couple of components to this, right? Because I guess if you develop your own technology and your intent is, I guess I come up with a differential. I say, if you develop your own technology and your intent is in part to resell that technology as well to others to leverage it to do that, but you actually do that service, then that's one thing. If you're not doing any of that and you're just building that app just to be able to sell your stuff, then I don't see you so much as a tech company, I guess.
Right.
Is that?
Yeah, and I think the reality of Uber is they've made a bunch of noises about moving into sort of the wider space of, you know, using technology to optimize transportation. But it's their core business is still the ride sharing.
Right. But apparently we keep finding out every time that they're going around that they're kind of scumbags.
Yeah, so let's talk about that now. So they've had, you know, this for the last week, practically every day, there's been something else coming out about Uber doing something somewhat scummy.
Yes. And here's the thing, right? I mean, you know, because it, for some reason, so then it came out today, is like, to make it even funny that Ashton Kutcher apparently is an investor in Uber, and he was like annoyed by the criticism.
Yep.
And they said, so the biggest thing this week, if nobody saw it in the news, was the fact that a vice president at Uber, basically he recorded saying this?
No, he would just said it at a dinner that a reporter was attending.
Okay, he said it at a dinner that he basically wanted to create, hire a whole group of, like, private investigators and everybody to basically just dig up dirt on all the reporters that are saying crap about Uber. Well, and just basically
And more specifically, it was targeted at one specific reporter who's been a pain in their ass. And he implied that they could use the data that they have in their systems to prove certain personal allegations that had been made against this reporter.
Right. So, now some people could understand the difference is like, why if the reporter is like, you know, reporting on things happening in Uber, why would it be, you know, bad to do the reverse? And I, you know, look, the reporting that's being done about the stuff at Uber is reporting about their business practices and things that they do. And how they are not viewed unfavorable. A lot of questioning, for example, Uber has a freaking like an F rating at the Better Business Bureau, for God's sakes. Okay, all right, you know, for example.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Because I've heard lots of people like rave about the actual service they provide.
There are a lot of people that bitch about the service. Okay. All right. I mean, they have, for example, if you go to the BBB, here's even the worst thing. The BBB has tried to talk to Uber about the customer complaints, and they've refused to talk to the Better Business Bureau.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's why they have an F. Then there's, you know, there's been instances of, like, just quite a lot of other tactics and things that practices.
Let's list some of them. One of Uber's biggest competitors is Lyft. Mm-hmm. So Uber got caught last year, I think. It was a while ago. With Uber employees ordering rides from Lyft and then canceling them right before the rides arrived.
Right. I heard about that.
Over and over and over again, enough to make an impact.
Yes.
And we've got this story, and then after this, another reporter came out and said that at one time she was coming to a meeting with an Uber executive or whatever, and the executive met her on the street outside the building and held up his phone and basically showed her, look, I was tracking you coming in. You know, because and so it's come out this week that with a bunch of leaks from them that apparently this internal tool that they call God Mode, which is supposed to only be used for very specific troubleshooting reasons, blah, 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 is actually widely available within the company. And so all kinds of people are able to potentially abuse it and track people. Now, they're just like when we talked about the NSA stuff, there's not a lot of evidence of people directly doing sort of evil things with this. But,
well, but you know, not evil things, but let's face it. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, look at that. I mean, the guy was using the information and got, oh, look, I know where the hell you're going.
Right. Well, they also, apparently, there was an Uber party or something that had, a big projection thing that showed a map of, you know, where various people were going in the city. And one of the party attendees, like, called up one of the people that they were tracking and was like, hey, we're watching you on the big screen, you know, during the party. And it's like, you're what? You know? And then there was also they actually posted on their blog a number of months ago, but it was brought up again because this was because of everything else coming out this week, a blog post they did. And I'm not as upset about this one because it was all anonymous, but they did tracking basically to try to figure out, you know, how many people were using Uber to get back and forth from one night stands, and how that
was
distributed through the year and through the week and things like that. Because they basically said, hey, let's look for people who get dropped off somewhere between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. and then leave again within 6 hours.
Right.
They called them rides of glory.
Yes, I heard about that too. So yeah. That was, you know. But there were other things, for example, the surge pricing, which a lot of people have been complaining about. That's another thing.
Well, and this
people,
was
it's been appears that in a lot of instances, people have said that this has not been as clear as they claim it is.
Right. Because they actually claim that as one of their benefits, that if there's a congested time, the price will dynamically adjust, which has two effects. One, it'll reduce the number of people looking for it to the people who really, really, really want the ride. And also, it'll encourage more drivers to come online because they'll get paid more for those rides.
Right. No, I hear you. I mean, and that happens in the airline industry. It happens everywhere. I mean, let's face it. You're going to want to try to buy a ticket in the holidays. It's going to be more expensive. As simple as that. But I think that the one thing is that...
Well, the difference here was sort of the real-time reaction. So there wasn't planned in advance or anything. You'd just see the prices start to creep upward if there was a snowstorm or if there was anything going on.
Right.
And so people, of course, criticized it as gouging. But of course,
they were encouraging certain drivers to get some prime loans in order to purchase cars for the service. Mm. That was another one that I saw. I mean, there's just a lot here. The bottom line is this: a lot of the stuff have been legitimate business
choice,
fundamental complaints.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. You know, you have a service, it's operating, and, you know, there is a lengthy list of business practices that, you know, are in question. Some people have made significant questions about the liability insurance that's included as well.
Right.
Okay?
And the vetting of the drivers.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of questions. And so, you know, given that they are legitimate business questions – that are focused on the business, not on the individuals that are operating the company and who they are and what they do, if they're fucking their dog or something, whatever. I don't know. I mean, but that's my point, because they're going into a smear campaign and they're basically what are they going to dig up in the reporter? Is that what are they going to do? That's the only thing you can do.
Well, the implication was that either they would release the information and discredit the reporter in some way, or they'd blackmail her with the information, or something. And any of these things, it's like, really? What?
Really?
You know?
I mean, that is not
address what the reporter has to say about you and the truth or falsehood of that, but, you know.
Exactly.
And look, if you have actual information that there's, you know, some serious conflict of interest where, you know, they're making shit up or something, well, you still address the actual issues on the table. Like, I think one of the things that was mentioned was that they were implying that she had a financial relationship with one of Uber's competitors.
Now that's something that's important to, you know, that needs to be disclosed. That's about where I draw the line, for example, when there are conflicts of interest. That's it. Either you have a financial relationship with somebody else that you didn't disclose.
And I would say in that case, yes, the reporter, if that is true, the reporter probably should disclose the interest.
Yes.
But B, nonetheless, if she says specific things about your company, you still have to address those specifics.
That's true.
You know, because the disclosure is a separate issue. And I think actually, like, they were implying there's other personal things they could say about her, not just that. Because I believe the financial interest was actually implied that it was actually something fairly indirect. Like, the publication that she worked for was invested in by somebody who also invested in Lyft.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
Maybe they have ulterior motives, but even if it was your competitor directly coming against accusations, you still have to address the accusations, whatever they are. But I think the common element behind all of these Uber criticisms that have been coming out this week has basically boiled down to the people who run Uber are jackasses.
That's what it seems like to me. That's, as far as I can tell, from all the behavior and everything and all the actions they have taken over time, that's what it looks like to me. I can't really think of anything else to think about them.
And we've talked about before, lots of successful business people are jackasses.
Well, yes, but there's levels and there's levels. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, for example, I mean, I think that, you know what, talking about how, especially when you're a startup, okay, mm-hmm. All right, startups tend to kiss ass a lot. Okay, right. Can I be honest? I mean, they do that a lot. Even like, you know, people are talking about, I was reading an article recently about how some people like Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs, for example, used to wear the same clothes over and over, you know, but they don't think about that. Now, that's true. But however, what people fail and later when they were super successful, they were kings of the world. They did that. But you know what? I'm sorry. When Steve Jobs was looking for money, he fucking wore a suit. Okay. He went and kissed some people's ass. All right. Uber is still in a startup mode. Okay. All right. You know, when you're at that stage, you tend to go and kiss people's asses, okay? And Uber is, like, at a startup mode and basically just going to everybody, guns blazing, giving everybody the double barrel fingers and saying, screw you! Well, you know what? That doesn't work very well. I gotta be honest with you. I wouldn't use their service. If you know.
You wouldn't use Uber service, right?
No!
See, now, I'm of mixed minds here, because on the one hand, you know, I actually have heard good things about actually using the service.
Daddy, I have to tell you stuff.
What do you have to tell me?
Can you start the game I want to play?
Not right
after.
Now. Yes, after. I already told you yes. But you keep interrupting, so you're going to have to leave.
I'm not interrupting. After I say
sorry. No, that's still interrupting.
No, it's not.
Uh-huh. Anyway, I downloaded the app a while ago, and honestly, because I thought, you know, maybe there would be some circumstances where this would be useful or interesting or whatever, and I've heard a couple people say, you know, good things about using it, but you know, I've never actually had the opportunity. If I had, maybe I would have gone ahead and done it. Would this change anything today? It doesn't make me want to use it more, but I'm not sure it would stop me from using it if I was in a situation where I was stuck somewhere without my car or needed to get somewhere.
Let me put it this way. I'm at an airport. I need a cab. I'm taking a cab from the taxi stand with a medallion.
Well, like, you know, that's probably the kind of situation where you wouldn't do it. I mean, like,
people do. I've seen a lot of people, like, calling for rides that I read that do that there.
Yeah. I mean, I would never even consider it for a place where there was a line of cabs lined up.
Okay.
You know, but if I'm going from point to point in random places, I probably would. Although, even there, honestly, the convenience.
I'd get your ride. I'd have a car. I don't know.
No, the big convenience they offer is, you've already got your card in the app. It charges you automatically. You don't even have to think about interacting with the driver to arrange a payment or anything like
that. Listen, I think the technology's cool. Don't get me wrong. I don't argue that point. I just don't feel that Uber is a company that I want to do business with. If somebody else,
I can understand that just because they're jackasses.
No, it's beyond that. I just think that they've got some poor business practices that could really wind up in some case. Something goes wrong, I'll get screwed. I'll get screwed either money-wise or I'm going to get a bad driver or a whack job. Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's really what I think. I just don't – I don't feel warm and fuzzy when a company gets like over 300, 400 BBB complaints and the company doesn't even address them.
I think that that's another indication of just the general arrogance or whatever, because they're like, screw that BBB. Yeah, if someone wants to complain, they can talk to us.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's my take, and I just think, yeah, I mean, these people are just, messed in the head.
Now, and these specific things, like I have heard some counters, like, you know, the Uber folks claim, for instance, that this wasn't like the guy on a stage at the front of the dinner making a speech. It was the guy was at the table with his dinner party and the reporter overheard it.
I get that, and sometimes I know that we say some over the top stuff and we're like friends, okay, all right, and if that's the case, I mean, I get that, but still doesn't excuse all the other scummy business practices I'm talking about. That's just icing on the cake to me.
Right.
I thought they were scummy before I heard that. That just added to the whole pile of it, you know?
I can see that. Now, do you think, like, yeah? What I've also noticed is that after all of this has come out this week, they have not been managing the PR well.
Like, no. Like, as a matter of fact, they've just been making it worse.
Yeah. They've been digging themselves deeper, whereas, you know, you'd think, you know, the guy said something that on the face of it seems inexcusable. It's been reported in the paper. Your company is getting slammed because of it.
And you're just making it worse.
Let me put it this way.
Listen, I'm looking at right now. Let's put it this way. Market Watch, right? Owned by the Wall Street Journal. Not exactly a paragon of, like, you know, liberal, like, publishing, right? 3 hours ago, they tweeted a story that says 7 reasons you may want to delete your Uber app.
Right.
I mean, how... I mean, you know what? When you're generating this kind of publicity, I mean, seriously, you got problems.
You'd think they'd, like, have put out a statement that was very clear. I mean, they did apologize for this statement and say the guys reviews didn't represent, but they didn't fire him. They didn't discipline him. They didn't do anything like that. And all of the other things you're saying, you know, they haven't, for the most part, there's no indication that they feel like they've actually done anything wrong. They're just sort of like, you know, well, that's the way we do it. Screw you.
Duh.
And you know, and I can understand that they're trying to be innovative in a bunch of areas and doing things differently. But, you know, if you're really rubbing a bunch of people the wrong way, you got to think about it.
Check this story out. The 7 reasons you want to delete your Uber app. Number one, Uber tracks riders hookups. We just talked about that.
Yep.
Uber wants to pair riders with sexy girls as drivers.
They were doing that in Europe. Yep, something.
Actually, it's not that bad an idea. But anyway, okay. An Uber driver was arrested for kidnapping a club goer.
Nice.
Okay, there you go. That's number three. Number four.
Of course, you got to compare to those. I'm sure cab drivers have been arrested for various unsavory things too. But go ahead.
I'm sure. Okay. Lyft says Uber sabotages booking rides and canceling them. So we should talk about that. Uber tried poaching Lyft drivers while riding Lyft cars. Okay, all right, that's another one. A girl was struck and killed by an Uber car, and Uber didn't take responsibility. Now, this is the one that I was talking about, the liability issues of the vehicles.
Right.
Okay.
Basically, did they just try to say, well, it's all the driver's fault?
Uber was sued in January by the family of a 6-year-old who was struck and killed by an Uber driver on New Year's Eve 2013 in San Francisco. The company said in a statement that the driver was not technically providing services during the time of the accident. But so-and-so forth told USA Today that he was logged onto the network and taking rides. Okay?
Mm.
So, you know.
So he didn't actually have a passenger in the car, but he was
cruising around waiting
for the next call.
Right. You can't actually cancel your Uber account, in the Uber app. So there you go. So that's enough. So there you go. But my point is about this. I mean, you're talking about the negative publicity. I mean, give me a break. I mean, you know, this is the kind of crap that's going around. I mean, you know, yeah, these guys are just. Can they survive this?
We talked a few months ago about how that that Mozilla exec ended up resigning, not because he'd necessarily done anything particular, quote unquote, wrong. He just had the wrong position on a political issue, but it was causing all kinds of distress for the core audience of the company,
you know,
and causing them all kinds of negative publicity. And regardless of the issue or how just it was or not, the bottom line was they were causing problems for the company, and so he was gone.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. You were about to say, will they survive? And I was just going to say, with Uber, so far you haven't seen that any sort of assumption of any accountability, because I think they're counting on what you just said, which is, you know, this is something that'll blow over in a couple days. People like the service. They're going to keep using it. They're going to keep growing. Because, I mean, I've been, before this particular stuff, just aside from the all the misbehavior of the company, the fundamental idea of this and disrupting the cab industry with something better where you use your app and you say, come pick me up, and you can see where all the cars are and see how far away from you they are and pay online automatically. All this kind of stuff is really cool. And it is a much smoother experience potentially than a cab. And so all that stuff's cool, and people like it, and people find it reliable. And aside from the BBB complaints you've had, the majority of the commentary I've heard it over the last year is how cool it is and how useful it is and all this kind of stuff. And so they're counting on, regardless of any negative publicity they get over this, the bottom line is at the end of the day, more people are going to use Uber.
I think the thing is that right now it's just a freaking tidal wave of it. I mean, if they can somehow survive the onslaught and continue, and then, you know, maybe people will forget it. I mean, people are forgetting bigger
people
negative
have very,
onslaughts.
Very short memories.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, I still remember, like, what the hell was it? ValueJet, right? Okay, all right. You know, everybody, they had a massive accident. Business dropped like 50%. You know, it was a disaster. They tip taking blame. They just changed the name. They changed the name of the company to AirTran. And then, you know, they did business. Then everybody was like, years later, it was like, AirTran, what the hell? You know, forget it. They didn't associate it with the other airline.
Right, because they changed their name.
Right. And so, or like, who the hell was it? The Blackwater guy. So yeah. He changed the name of the company and nobody fucking recognizes the new, I can't even remember the name of the new company.
Yeah, I don't remember either. It's exactly. Or something. I don't know.
It's called, let me see. I gotta fucking, you know, I mean, I.
Now you have to look it up.
Yeah. Academy.
What Academy?
That's what it is. Academy. Academy.
I think they had another name in between.
XE Services in 2009 and then Academy in 2011. But shit, if you go and there's a news article or something, whatever, talking about Academy,
you're not going to think Blackwater.
Exactly.
Right.
So.
And look, but I think, you know, memories are short. This is, you know, a tempest in a teapot. And frankly, there's, you know, a core group.
Well, it's gotten a little bit bigger than that.
But here's the thing: there's you know, a core group of people who actually pay attention to this kind of stuff that are bothered about it this week. Even those core group of people are probably not going to worry about it too much. Like a month from now, it'll be like blown away by the news, and then the vast majority of their customers probably don't even have the slightest clue.
But you know that the bigger thing that this week that hit it, you know, so then, you know, Ashton Kutcher that started talking about it.
Yeah, and then, well, he came off looking stupid too.
But. Well, yes, I agree. Not arguing that. But my point is that, you know, you got people like that talking about it. So all of a sudden it started raising the profile of this thing. I mean, I don't know. But like you said, you know, memories are short. You know, nobody remembers anything anymore anyway. So
I mean,
look at how people are still outraged about NSA data collection.
Yes. Or Guantanamo.
Or Guantanamo.
You know, whatever. You pick
whatever.
Pick any issue that exploded onto the public scene more than 6 months ago, and, you know, unless there's been some new development in it, no one's talking about it. No one cares.
Nobody
cares.
Know,
you know, you might remind them about it, but whatever. You know, that was last year's news. So. Anyway, let's take a break. We've been going a long time. And we'll come back and we'll talk about immigration. Back after this. Hey, you listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme.
And Yvonne is at IMBO. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that.
And we're back.
Immigration. Are you planning on doing any?
You know, I was just having a text conversation with my wife about potential countries to move to and pros and cons.
Okay, so which countries did you guys, you know, consider?
Well, you know, I brought up it started out with a mention about Canada. Mm-hmm. And I replied something along the lines of, hey, Canada sounds cool. I like Canada. Don't you just go there and nobody has to work and they just give you money? And she said, no, that's not what Canada is like. And
then would be nice.
And then I'm like, well, maybe I was thinking of Sweden. And she's
they've cut back on that.
And they're like, no, not Sweden. And
Norway.
And she mentioned there was other screwed up things about Sweden. And, you know, I basically mentioned a few other random countries. And
every country has something screwed up. Come on, there's no perfect country.
That's true.
I mean, but come on.
It turns out I could not think of the right country that I could just go to and they just throw money at me. So
okay,
we're probably staying where we are.
Norway payments to...
well, you know, you don't have to go that far.
If Norway you just oil payments to Sweden. All Norwegians become crown millionaires in oil savings, it says here. There you go.
Well, I was just going to say, you don't have to go that far. You just go to Alaska. Alaska pays you every year.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if it's enough to live on.
No. But, you know, it's something.
Well, no, but I think it's more than that. I mean, I think if you live in Norway, I mean, you basically could just, you know.
Kick back?
Yeah, just sit there.
So what you're saying is Norwegians never do anything?
I guess they have the option not to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure quite how. Well,
avoiding the curse of oil-rich nations. It says here that every nation wants to strike oil. Oil, ba-da-ga-ba-ba. But it says that Norway apparently has avoided it. Apparently, the Norway Economic Fund, it said that Alaska, they get $878.
That's not too much.
That's not too
per
much.
Per person, yeah, right?
It's nice, but apparently in Norway, apparently the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Norway right now has enough money that every person in Norway is basically a millionaire.
Excellent.
Here it is. Every single person in Norway became a millionaire last week. Okay, all right. On Wednesday, everyone in Norway became a theoretical millionaire as the country's sovereign wealth
theoretical
fund,
is the key
the
word.
The largest in the world, soared to 5.11 trillion crowns, 8.66 billion, due to high global oil and gas prices. So basically, every person.
But did they actually? Yeah, are they paying out?
Make payouts.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. There are a variety of other oil-rich countries that you have.
Brunei, I heard Brunei. They get Kuwait as well. You know, but
I'm not moving to Brunei.
Yeah, I don't want to move to Kuwait. I'd move to Norway. I'd consider that.
Yeah, Norway I've heard some decent things about Norway, but you know,
you met my friend in college from Norway. You know,
yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, you know, very nice. You know, very nice people. You know, yeah,
I guess so. In any case, I'm not actually moving anywhere.
No, we're not.
I'm not emigrating. I'm not doing anything of the sort.
No. Okay. No. All right. Fuck.
But anyway, to the actual point here.
Yeah.
Obama has been pushing for the notion that we need some sort of comprehensive immigration reform almost since the time he became president, although it wasn't really a priority the first few years. And then last year sometime, he basically said, look, Congress, they actually managed to pass some sort of bill through the Senate. And he said, look, Congress, specifically the House, if you don't do anything with this within X amount of time, and I forget how much the X is, I'll just do whatever I can with my executive power. And he said, I can't do everything I'd want to as an executive. It's better if Congress does this. But if Congress doesn't, the current situation is not good. There are things I can do to improve it, and I'm going to do it unilaterally if Congress doesn't act. So, and that was supposed to happen before the election, and then he said, yeah, I'm going to do it after the election. It's now after the election. He's making an announcement approximately 24 hours from the time we're recording this show on what he's going to do. And the initial reports basically are that he's going to order the immigration services to essentially ignore certain kinds of cases. And he'd already done this with the Dreamers a while ago, and this expands that further. So, for instance, one of the classes that apparently are not going to be subject to deportation anymore are if you've got a child that is an American citizen because they were born on American soil, but their parents are illegal, the parents are no longer subject to deportation.
Right, which that had been something that had been happening a lot, and it'd be causing, like, terrible things. I mean,
because you're either breaking up the family or you're sending the kid home who's never known any place else and is an American citizen. I shouldn't say sending the kid home, sending them to a country they've never been to and where they may not even be a citizen.
Or no, the kids were staying in some
they were usually breaking them up and being deported. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like crazy. I mean, you were taking we're talking little children whose parents were being deported. Okay. Which just didn't make any sense. So, yes, I did hear about that.
I think there were other changes as well. It's not entirely clear all the details yet that he'll be announcing that tomorrow. So we'll talk about that next week, I guess. But the big controversy here is just the notion that the president is taking unilateral executive action on an important issue like this without Congress approving.
Well, let's face it. Let's look at the facts. Bush tried to get immigration reform done.
Yep.
He failed. I mean, this has been like, I think even frickin' Clinton. I don't remember if Clinton tried to do something. I think he did, but probably not as big. But Bush definitely tried.
I think there was something in Clinton years as well.
So the reality is that the last time we had a major immigration bill passed, if I recall correctly, was Reagan.
Right.
And by the way, he passed, oh my God, heaven forbid Republicans.
Amnesty.
It was called an amnesty. It was done by Reagan, your boy. Okay? All right? It was called an amnesty. Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, Reagan did an amnesty. I'm sorry to tell you the truth. You know, so now amnesty has become like a four-letter word for some reason. We've done them over the last 100-plus years,
and
it's a four-letter word.
Just to be clear, the amnesty does not mean they become citizens or anything like that. It just means they are not going to be deported, and they're going to be offered some sort of legal status that they can use to move forward. And they're usually some fairly strict conditions.
But they were provided a process for them to become citizens. Right. Okay. You know, they could pay their taxes. There were a certain number of things, okay, for them in order to do that. But, you know, but that's become now a four-letter word, amnesty.
Yeah. But again, the thing is, The key issue people keep bringing up is, regardless of the merits of the issue, I saw something saying, if you actually start talking about the merits of the issue, the Republicans will probably lose on the conversation, but which is why the Republicans want to keep it on a question of proper use of executive power, which is a valid question. You know, is it okay here? Now, one of the things I read about this lately says that the statutes that are actually in question provide very strict guidance on what to do in certain cases where, like, the illegal is a felon or is a danger in some way, but actually doesn't provide a lot of guidance on proper procedures.
Which is what I thought, and I was pretty sure there is.
The argument, therefore, is that in that case,
the executive does have a lot of discretion.
That's correct.
Basically, prosecutorial discretion, which exists on almost all laws, which say that, as a very simple example, you don't see Americans up in arms that the police aren't arresting every single person who goes above the speed limit.
Correct.
Because it's recognized that, okay, yes, that's the law, but people will use their discretion on when to issue tickets, when to arrest, when to do this, when to do that. And that applies in a lot of other situations too. Even crimes that people would agree are more serious, like, shoplifting or whatever. A police officer catches somebody red-handed, a teenager or something red-handed shoplifting something out of a store that costs $3. They might decide to prosecute. They might, grab them, walk them back into the store, say, put back the candy bar, and we'll forget this happened. Don't do it again.
Right.
The idea is that you get the police have discretion, the prosecutors have discretion, the judges have discretion, and in all the cases up and down the line, it's not a universal. Now, you can make an argument, and I've made this argument myself, that any law that isn't enforced most of the time should probably just be overturned as not a valid law, just because, if you're not enforcing it consistently, then it's an open opportunity for abuse, because you decide arbitrarily who to enforce it against.
Correct.
And even on the immigration laws, there's a good case to be made that there's a much higher chance of you actually getting into trouble with the immigration authorities and having action taken against you if you're an illegal Mexican immigrant versus, we were just talking about Norway. If you're an illegal immigrant from Norway...
Right, that there's very low likelihood that if you're an illegal Norwegian, you're going to get deported. Yeah, I have the feeling that that's true.
Yeah. Or Canada.
Sheriff whatever the fuck his name is out in Phoenix is going out and rounding up illegal Norwegians.
Now, I'm sure there are a lot fewer of those, but
there are.
The point, though, is that arbitrariness is a problem in and of itself, but apparently there is room for discretion in this law. So, of course, Obama and everybody are going to argue that everything that he's about to announce is fully within his legal power. And the Republicans are also going to argue that everything he's doing is a horrible overreach of executive authority that has to be stopped. I've been on record many times saying I don't like it when executives operate independently. I like it when, a legislative process results in a decision and then the executive executes on that
law.
Well,
let's face it, we're not the president is not going around like right now and giving citizenship to a whole bunch of people like without the law. That's not what he's doing. What he's choosing to do is like to defer action on a number of people like right now that typically we'd be doing action upon, but basically deferring it because we don't have a clear guidance from the law.
You're making the determination that it's not in the larger service of justice
to act on it. Right. So,
I am very sympathetic to the argument that probably shouldn't be the president's call. But I also see like this is an inevitable response to a Congress that's unable to act on its own. And
that's true.
And frankly, the opposite direction too. There's certainly a crap load of stuff that George W. Bush did without congressional authority.
Absolutely.
in a bunch of different areas as well. So this is not unique to the Democrats at all.
No, not at all.
But our argument had been
about this in both sides, that the fact is that the bigger problem is that you've got Congress that is not taking sufficient action, passing enough bills, legislating, and doing their job.
It's not only that, like, you get... And it's an interesting strategic choice from the Republicans, as it usually is here, because, you know, they could probably have, you know, first of all, if they start talking about the actual merits here, one of the problems is the Republican Party is actually divided on the merits of this issue.
Right. They're completely.
There are some Republicans who are, look, you're crazy, guys. We have to do something about this that makes sense, or we're killing ourselves in the electorate. There are a lot of Latino Americans who are going to be really pissed at us if we come off as a bunch of jingoistic assholes.
Which a lot of them are.
And then the other half of the party is, you know, America raw! You know, and keep all the foreigners out. You know, and and so you have that division within the Republican Party. However, if the Republicans had actually worked with the Democrats to try to come up with some sort of compromise that you worked on the things that, you know, there was some sort of overlap on, they could go a long way towards shaping the legislation in a way that is more acceptable to the Republicans. By not doing anything at all, what they actually almost guarantee from a policy perspective is now Obama is going to go off and do something far more expansive and in a much different direction than the Republicans might have wanted to do if they were doing it themselves. And on the one hand, you've got two ways to look at this, and this is the fundamental dichotomy that the Republicans have been working with all the time, that you end up with a policy result that is less to your liking. However, you out of that, you get an issue that you can go to your base and say, look how evil Obama is, and use that as a rallying cry against the Democrats in the next election.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't think that I think the plan is crap. I mean, they've tried this before. It's only, you know.
You mean the Republican plan?
Yes.
Because of not cooperating and then
right,
using
because,
it
look,
as an
look,
electoral
it's only
issue.
Worked in the midterms. It hasn't worked in the presidential election year. It's worked in the midterms when the turnouts have been lower.
Uh huh.
That's been what I consistently seen.
And it's worked in a lot of local and state races as well.
Right. Yeah. But it just doesn't work in the presidential year because turnout is just higher, and they are just not on the right. They are just not on the not the right side, but not just on the majority side, the popular side on a lot of these issues.
Now the dog's barking. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna let him out. You talk.
Come on,
both of you. Roscoe, you're out too. You were barking.
Roscoe, you got
out there too. Close the door, Alex. Chaos. Anyway, yeah, I, and of course, you know, moving on to the next stage of this, of course, you've got a number of Republicans making noise about what they're going to do, assuming Obama takes these actions. And, you know, of course, one possibility that is not very much talked about is, hey, let's react to this by actually passing some legislation that addresses this issue and say, here's the Republican solution to this. Obama, why don't you sign it? Because we're actually offering up a potential solution. Nobody's really talking about that. Some people are, but not the ones who are the noisiest, let's say. So the other things that they keep bringing up are the old bugaboos. We're going to shut down the government again over this.
I hope they do.
Although they're talking about how they can be smarter about it, and instead of shutting down the whole government, pass very specific laws authorizing funding in very specific areas that include riders that would prevent Obama from implementing various parts of his plan. So, for instance, fund the Department of Homeland Security, but only under certain conditions, and then dare Obama to veto it. Because then if Obama vetoes it, because of course the dynamics are different once the Republicans control both houses come January, then it's no longer, you know, they couldn't pass something because the Democrats filibustered it or whatever. It's going to be they did pass it. They have passed the bill funding the government, and the president is vetoing it. The president is shutting down.
All right. So we're go back to a scenario that we haven't had in a long time, which is a president veto. I'm trying to remember. Has Obama vetoed anything?
Maybe once or twice, but he's had the least number of vetoes of any president in the last like 30 years or something.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, it used to be a very common thing for a fucking president to veto something.
Well, it's common whenever you've got, both houses of Congress with one party and the president with the other.
In
any other situation, it's relatively rare.
List of U.S. presidential vetoes. Okay, let's see. Barack Obama, a whopping 2. Well, I mean, if you don't pass a lot of bills, I guess there's just not a lot of freaking things to veto.
Now, just out of curiosity, what did he veto?
It's a great question. It doesn't say.
Ah, okay. Homework for next week.
Okay, hold on.
Now we're going to have to listen to you.
Making
search.
Continuing appropriations for fiscal year 2010 or for other purposes. Override attempt failed in House. This is December 30th, 2009. The Interstate Recognition of Notarizations Act of 2010. Override attempt failed in House.
I don't know what the hell either one of those are.
I don't know what they are, but that's what it is. Now Bush vetoed more. Bush vetoed 12, and 4 were overridden. Okay? Clinton had 37 vetoes. Mm-hmm. Okay? You see there, remember? 2 were overridden. George H.W. Bush, which is in office only 4 years, had 44 vetoes.
Right.
Okay? All right? And only 1 was overridden. Reagan had 78 vetoes. Okay, all right.
And remember, he had a Democratic Congress for most
of
his time.
And 9 were overridden. So, yeah, I mean, shit. I mean, we've had only 2 freaking vetoes. I mean, under Obama. I mean,
again, we haven't had the kind of situation that sets up for a veto.
Now, let's put it to you this way. I'm looking at now, what is the president that you would say, okay, this may be an easy answer. What president had the most vetoes?
FDR.
Obviously, yes, because he was in office longer than everybody else. 635 vetoes. I mean, that's a staggering number. 9 were overridden. Only 9 were overridden. Harry Truman, who was in office only 4 years, had 250 vetoes. Okay, all right? And 12. Now, of course.
He was more than 4 years.
Truman? Oh, yeah, he was a little bit more than 4. That's right, because he had to take over.
He had like 7, right, he, almost right, right, 8 years, because he had
because he had to take over. Right. I forgot. So yeah, 250 vetoes. Now, before that, if you take out FDR, who obviously served more than 2 terms, a 2-term Grover Cleveland had 414 vetoes.
You're going back a ways now.
Yeah. I mean,
but
my point is that, look. If you go back, okay, before this, the last 2 presidents, we used to have a lot of this going on because there was a lot of legislation going on. We just haven't had much of any in the last freaking like 14 years. There's not a lot to veto and the people don't pass anything.
Yeah. So, but anyway, look, in this kind of thing, excuse me. So one possibility here is the shutdowns, and they're trying to figure out how they can be smarter and, you know, sort of they would go ahead and pass the bills to you know, the national parks and all of the kinds of things that are all the things that get visible and on TV of, oh, you can't believe the Republicans shut this down. And they would take their riders and only put them on the things that would be politically costly for Obama to veto. Now, of course, before we get there, apparently our current funding runs out December 11th or something. So only 3 weeks from now. So the speculation right now is they'll pass something that'll get us into January, because then the Republicans will be able to be more creative with what they do. And then, of course, that's the one approach. Another approach is let's impeach him because he's doing executive overreach, and let's impeach him. And we've talked about before how that could be a political circus, but in the end, they don't have the votes to convict in the Senate.
Right.
Because they've got a Republican majority, but they don't have, it takes a supermajority in order to, convict
him. That's not going to happen.
And then the other thing, Senator Cruz, put out something, within the last 24 hours, basically saying that his recommendation for how to react is basically don't allow any nominations to go through in the Senate for any positions other than critical national security positions. So no judges, no undersecretaries of state, none of this stuff. Only
that's really gonna, you know, really go over well. Obviously, of course, you know. I mean, you know, look. I mean, all these thermonuclear options, they all sound very sexy, but at the end, they're all very messy. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, and there's the question of what the Republicans are reaching for is which of these options allows them to make their statement, allows them to protest what the president is doing, obstruct it if possible, blowing up in their face politically.
I think that if they believe, okay, all right, if they believe that that they are in their right, the way to do it, my perspective, they're going to get, if they want support, is to pass the bills and force Obama to veto. That I think is the only way. And then people have got to gauge whether what Obama is vetoing is what they want, and the president is just a guy blocking it.
Right.
I think that is the only way. But I think that there's such a herd of fucking cats that I don't think they can agree on anything anyway.
That may be possible. And even if they pass something, there's the other battle of, like, can they convince people that what they're doing in the bill that is passed? Because presumably what they want to do is pass a bill that looks really good, but has sort of poison pills in it that make Obama want to veto it. That make it so that he has to veto things that a lot of people like in order to not get the little bits in the bill that that the Democrats fundamentally oppose.
Right.
And, I don't know, because like you said, like if they were to try to do that, you know, it's one thing to do that on a funding bill. It's another thing, like, you know, could the Republicans actually get together on some sort of immigration bill that they could push through? I think the answer is no right now.
No.
Because they are so divided internally on this.
That's right. So.
Okay, let's take a break. And we got one other thing, the music industry, which we'll try to do relatively quickly, maybe. We'll be back right after this.
Call me maybe.
Yes.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I think the dog and the kid and everybody else have actually gone downstairs or something now. But, you know. So, anyway, the music industry. We had... this is spurred by Taylor Swift pulling herself off Spotify, right?
Right.
So... You've ranted in the past about how none of these streaming services are making any money. What are your current thoughts on this?
They're not. Here's the thing.
And of course, the issue is they're not paying their artists very much either.
No, they're not paying the artists very much. I mean, somebody the other day told me that, like Taylor Swift, for example, you do 5 million plays. They're paying a penny a play, for God's sakes. Okay? So what do they get? $50,000? Is that right? I got my old school.
Yeah.
$50,000. That's exactly right. For 5 million plays, $50,000, the fuck are they going to make any money?
Well, and you know, the argument is like, you know, you got somebody like Taylor Swift who has the enough of an impact that they can pull themselves off like this.
Here's the thing about your
run-of-the-mill average artist.
Yeah.
You know, they're making pennies.
Fine. So what stops other artists? Here's the thing about that I have with my thing about, oh, streaming. Okay, I get it. That's great. Here's the problem, right? Okay, so you're streaming, right? So all of a sudden, hey, you like Taylor Swift songs. Guess what? She fucking pulled them off the service you're subscribed to. What do you do? You're fucked? I mean, I don't want to be beholden to fucking, like, have to somebody else's whim that all of a sudden they decide to end the fucking agreement with the streaming service and I can't hear my favorite music. And I listen to music a lot. Every day. And if, like, all of a sudden I went to my fucking playlist and the top songs on my playlist all of a sudden aren't available because the artist decided to pull them off, I gotta tell you something. I'd be pretty fucking pissed.
Well, the equivalency people put is that it's less like having your own record collection and more like listening to the radio.
Well, I hate listening to radio. I don't listen to the damn radio. I haven't listened to the radio in, like, freaking almost 15, 20 years for music.
Uh-huh. Well, it is more control than that, obviously, than just old-fashioned radio.
Not a hell of a lot more in some instances. I mean, depending on the service that you subscribe, obviously. But my point is that I don't see – and I – you know what? I don't see the angle. Why am I – if I'm Beyonce or Taylor Swift or some of these other megastars,
yeah,
right, for this kind of money – Why the hell am I putting my music out there on a streaming service?
Well, that's...
I am gaining nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly the argument, is that everybody knows you already. Like, the value that these services can give is exposure to people who aren't already that well-known, who aren't going to have people lining up to buy their album no matter what.
But here's the problem.
In the hopes that some of the people hear them for the first time and say, I like that, and I'm going to go buy that.
That's absolutely right. But the problem is then that these services become completely – who the hell is going to pay $11 a month for a service that has – or listen to a service that has nobody you know?
Right.
I mean, that's
– and so some people have been suggesting that services like Spotify should start transforming themselves – you know, essentially into labels. So they hire their own new artists and you develop them and do all this kind of stuff as well to bring up that farm team. But you've got this problem right now with the streaming video stuff too. Like, you know, some of the shows you want are on Netflix, some of the things are on Hulu, some of the things are over here, and like there's not a single place you can go to for everything. If you start getting the music artists also doing this, where instead of just being on the service under normal rates, maybe Taylor Swift goes to Spotify and says, "You want me? Pay me $1 million for an exclusive."
Exactly. That's right.
You know, and then she gets on, but now she's only on Spotify and she's not available on these other places. And, you know,
you have to start subscribing to 5, 6, 7 of these damn different services.
Right.
You're paying money out the ass.
Well, and you had U2, you know, as much as people hated the Apple deal, they were only available through Apple for like a month.
Right.
With their new album.
Right.
You know, so if you didn't want to get your stuff through Apple and you were a big U2 fan, well, then you were out of luck, at least legally. You know, and so if you get this sort of division where, you know, you have to get one thing, then that'll push people back towards buying music again or back to illegal solutions. Because basically, look, there's a generation of kids who've grown up. you know, basically anybody under like 25 right now who has basically come up with the expectation that music is not something you pay for. Music is something you get for free, whether it be originally like through, you know, Napster and those other services, or through streaming services or whatever, or sharing, you know, various other ways of sharing it with your friends, you know, and, you know, certainly I'm making a broad generalization here. There are plenty of people under 25 who do pay for music sometimes.
Well,
but you're building the you are building the expectation in the culture that, you know, that's not how you do it. I mean, because even
here's the thing, man. Technology changes and things change. I mean, you know, look, just like we didn't pay, did pay, do pay. I mean, you know, we used to listen to the damn radio 20, 30 years ago. Okay, you know, I don't know anybody who fucking listens to the radio anymore.
There are still people who do it.
I know it's a lot, but
I don't listen to the radio for music either, unless I have no other choice. You know, if I'm listening to music, I'm listening to it off my phone, streaming through the Bluetooth in my car. You know, yeah. And honestly, it's me. I usually listen to talk and stuff, but if I am listening to music, it's off my phone. But you know, I do listen to Apple's streaming service sometimes, not just my own music. You know, but which I actually pay for. To get it with no ads. But, you know, there's a cultural shift going on here, and the music industry, like the television industry, like the movie industry, is trying to figure out how the hell to get in front of it in a way that they can still make money.
We talk about people, talk about people not buying music, right?
Yep.
Okay, Taylor Swift, right? Who listens to Taylor Swift?
Apparently a lot of people.
but it's not my age. It's not our age group. Okay, all right.
Now, well, our age group has never been the big buying audience for music has always been 15 to 25.
Okay, so here's the thing: Taylor Swift's new album. Okay, all right. We're talking about people not buying music. Okay,
it's
sold.
Yeah,
sold. Okay, all right. Let me see. How many copies?
It sold the most of anything that's in the last couple of years, in the last few years.
It's, Jesus, 2 million, millions. It sold millions of copies.
Right.
So you and I are talking over here about this freaking album not sell, albums not selling, people not buying music. I hate to break it to you, but Taylor Swift sold millions of fucking copies of this fucking new album.
But people have been talking about it because it's such an unusual outlier now. Like, it used to be that you'd have many platinum albums every year. She is the only one this year.
Well, this year, right. Beyonce had one, you know, so I talked about her. She sold,
the point is they're getting... They're fewer... albums being sold overall, there are fewer songs being sold overall, and so it's much rarer when you get these kinds of
success. But I think that the reason is to a little bit, it's not so much because people aren't, I just don't think that there are that many big cohesive music artists like they used to be before as well.
Well, I mean, that's exactly part of it as well, is that the current environment, makes it harder to break out as the superstar, but makes it easier for there to be a lot of little artists. But the little artists are the ones who get hurt the most. Like, Taylor Swift can go say, screw you, Spotify. I'm selling just fine on my own. The little guy who's...
They're fucked.
Yeah, they're screwed. Exactly.
I mean, but... Hey, well, but the thing is that... Yeah, I mean, hey... Yeah, they're... I think
you should say there are differences in how you do this too, because there are plenty of little guys who, you know, it's going back to the old models. You're making the money from touring, you're making the money from merchandise, you're making the money from this, and your music is what draws people into those things. But you sort of almost expect that you make barely anything off the actual songs, but you use that as the hook to bring people in to your brand. Or whatever, and that, you know, and there are also niche artists as well that, you know, that you've got more people who are able to not become superstar multimillionaires, but make a living. You know, you know, we've mentioned before, like Jonathan Coulton, and who's, you know, is all about geek music. And there are a bunch of others that are, you know, they're not becoming multimillionaires, but, you know, they get their core audience. They can deliver their content and many, many times going directly to their users, not through a bunch of intermediaries. And, you know, they make a living.
Right.
And, but, and in some cases, a decent living.
So people have to go with different models. I just think this whole thing right now with the subscriptions is just the way it's set up. Nobody's making any fucking money. I just don't see how it, the way that it exists right now, how it survives.
And of course, the problem is if they say, okay, well, the royalties suck, so we're going to make the royalties better, then you destroy the economics of doing the thing in the first place.
Right.
Because you're going to have to increase the price of subscriptions. Fewer people are going to do subscriptions. More people will hang on to just your free product. And that's not making you any money because it costs you something to provide it, but they're not paying.
That's right.
Because the whole justification for the free product is it hooks people and then they pay
to buy a subscription. That's right. Now, of course, you heard this week that YouTube was going to sell subscriptions as well.
For music stuff.
For music stuff. So YouTube is – so, I think that the only – look.
And I've also heard, by the way, that in a bunch of demographics, YouTube is actually the way that people listen to a majority of their music, which I can't even understand that because, like, it's – okay, fine. People go find the things they're listening to and play them on YouTube. Fine.
Yeah. Make playlists and they
watch the videos.
Watch the videos, yes.
Or not watch the video and listen to the music. Whatever. But okay. I can't imagine going to YouTube for music. But
I do.
But I know lots of people do.
I do occasionally. So anyway, I guess the reality is that you and I don't have an answer to what the right business model for this thing. What we can say, I say, is that the current business model as is, okay, for streaming, I mean, it's going to crash and burn. I don't know what the hell's going to replace it, but giving away this stuff, whatever, right now, I mean, there's just nobody's making any money on it unless you have it as a loss leader and you're like Google and Apple and can afford to fucking like lose money on a service like this.
Well, and that actually might be part of the answer is that what happens is these ones that are trying to be independent, like Spotify and Pandora and all these guys,
they're all going to go out of business.
However, the people who offer this as one aspect of a larger service that they are making money on, like, you know, you get your iPhone and one of the value propositions of the music of the iPhone is you get music or your Android phone or your Google thing or whatever, you know, then they just swallow buying up the media as part of the cost of doing business of selling their phones.
Right. Yep, I guess.
You know, and that might be because you could definitely see like if you know, it could be a very serious benefit towards a particular phone that says if you get this phone, part of what you pay for with this phone is unlimited music,
or you know, X number of years of music,
or whatever. Yeah,
or whatever. Right. Well, all right. So that may be it. Okay, anything else we're going to talk about, or are we done?
I think we're done. I mean, there are other things we could talk about. I do want to point out, I did a post on, somebody asked me to, or actually two people ended up asking me to react to an article talking about how the Democrats were completely inevitable in 2016. I posted something last Sunday responding to that, basically saying, you know, yes, the Democrats are heavily favored, but let's not go overboard here. It's not inevitable. There are lots of things that could happen. There are lots of things that you could imagine that would end up to a Republican win. Democrats, again, heavily favored. The sort of structural dynamics of the presidential of the Electoral College right now are in the Democrats' favor, so the Republicans have a bigger road to get there. But, you know, the Democrats and even Hillary Clinton specifically are really good at shooting themselves in the foot. You know?
Oh, well. Well, the Republicans also have had a tendency, especially in the primaries.
Look, what it would take is for the Republicans somehow to not go through the nomination process and end up with somebody who can appeal to the middle, who hasn't completely destroyed themselves in the primary process, and at the same time have, you know, Hillary make a bunch of mistakes that make her look unattractive politically, and you know, a negative economy and Obama continuing to screw things up. You know, the point is, there are combinations of events that can lead to a Republican victory. They're not out of the question. Anybody saying, and a few people have been trying to make this argument that, you know, everything is just stacked against the Republicans in 2016. They're going to lose the Senate again, and they're going to lose the presidency. And that's absolutely positively inevitable because that's just how it's going to be. You know, that's going overboard. Yes, they're favored. It's not inevitable. And that was my only point in that thing. So go read it if you want to.
I agree that they're favored, but not inevitable. But anyway, all right, we're still probably going to have a lot of fun with the Republican primaries. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun. And the NSA reform bill was killed in the Senate because it got a majority, but not 60 votes. The Keystone Pipeline, same thing, but reverse who voted for what. The other interesting thing on the NSA front is that Rand Paul, who was a big critic of NSA stuff, actually voted against the reforms, supposedly because he thought they didn't go far enough. But you got to look at that and say, well, the end result is he voted with his party, which he typically disagrees on this, and it's not like they're going to get any better bill. You know, there's strong arguments that this bill wasn't that great to begin with, but it was at least a move in this direction. And, you know, it was almost a party line vote. So both of these things went down. So the interesting part of this is both of these bills went down. Both of them had majority support. Neither one of them had filibuster proof support. So they're dead. People are arguing about whether McConnell, when he becomes majority leader in January, should follow through with the threat that he made when Harry Reid used the nuclear option on nominations and just eliminate the filibuster entirely once he comes in. Which would be very interesting.
It's so what if he eliminates it? My point is that with a fucking Democratic president, big fucking deal.
Well, yeah, but it'll have implications going. If they do that, yet you're right, for the next 2 years, Obama can just veto everything. But it has implications going forward. The next time you have, all three areas, the House, Senate, presidency, in the same party, you make it so that, they can get through stuff without a minority being able to block it. And, of course, there's a very strong argument to be made that, well, that's exactly what should happen.
Well, if all three branches are a majority of one party, I got to
admit two branches. Congress is still one branch. The courts are third branch.
Right. The House, Senate, and
yeah, the argument is, look, if the House, Senate, and presidency really are in control
all
of
the majority
party,
of the same party,
well,
then
guess what? That party should be able to enact its agenda.
Exactly.
You know, and whether or not I voted for that party is irrelevant.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm fucking, you know, I lost out. I'm fucked. I mean, it is what it is.
And fight it in the next election. But yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for all of the various veto points in the American government. You know, and it is helpful to slow things down in a number of cases, because basically what it means is, in order to get something through Congress, you have to have something that's not just a majority, but
it's something that's going to piss off everybody equally. Basically.
Yeah, so, but anyway, we'll see what happens. I don't think he's going to eliminate the filibuster right off the bat, but
so
I think
who
now.
Do you think?
Now that door has been opened and sort of the psychological resistance against doing that has been, you know, cracked. I think the next time, I've said this before, the next time there is a critical issue that a party feels really strong about that's failing because of a filibuster, then it goes away.
You know, I am hoping, okay, all right, I am hoping that, I mean, there's, can we get Gingrich to run again? I mean, I loved his memo when his campaign was going down in flames the last time. I'd love to get Gingrich again. I mean, it's just for the humor.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Get Gingrich, we get Kane. I don't know. We can get somebody else with bad hair. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Okay, I'm looking ahead. All right, okay.
Enough. We're done. Thank you for joining us for another Curmudgeon's Corner. I'm Samuel Minter. You can reach me at abblesmay@abblesmay.com or at abblesmay on Twitter. Yvonne is at I am Bo on Twitter. We love hearing from you. Thank you very much to anybody who's sent us stuff recently. We appreciate your listenership. Tell your friends. Enjoy it. Have a good week. Thanksgiving's next week, but we'll probably record another show before it. So have a good time, everybody. We'll see you next time. There. Yvonne just tweeted a link to our podcast. So there you go.
Yes, I did. Well, I was checking to see if you had put our new picture up, but no, we still.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I was going to mention that because I might add it before I put this show out. We're updating our icon that we use as the cover for this show from a 20-year-old picture of us to a 10-year-old picture of us.
Yes! It's improvement!
You know, so I will have that up within the next couple weeks.
In my defense, I actually owned a suit that I have there and a tie, and I actually will look pretty close to that. Sam in no way whatsoever looks anywhere near remote.
Well, the picture I'm going to use that Yvonne provided the picture from, it was a wedding we went to 10 years ago. And it was actually the last time we've seen each other in person, I believe.
I think it may be.
You know, so 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago.
Nine years.
Yeah, nine, almost 10. You know, I'm wearing contacts, which I almost never do. I usually wear glasses, and it was before I grew my beard. So
yes.
I looked, you know, very different.
And what I told him is that he needs to lose that damn beard because he looks a lot younger without the beard. So anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, as I told my daughter, I have the beard because dads have beards. My dad had a beard. So well, it's a psychological thing.
Had a beard. Yeah, well, screwed a beard. It's got to go. My dad had a mustache when I was a kid, and you know what? At first, I kept it. I freaking shaved it. You know what happened? He shaved the mustache, and so did my brother. I got rid of the mustaches, so you got to start a new trend.
I keep telling my wife maybe I should shave my head.
No. You got plenty of hair. You keep the head.
Keep the hair?
Yeah. Keep that one. Plus, maintenance on that thing is a pain in the ass. For the people unless you're going bald, you know, that's too much work.
Dye it purple or something?
Oh, dye it. There you go. That's a great idea. I'm sure your wife will love that for the holidays.
I could do it red and white for Christmas.
Exactly. Yes. That sounds like a great idea. Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right, we're out of here, people.
We're out of here. Enjoy the new picture. If it's not out this week, it'll be next week. Probably this week. You can see 10 years old instead of 20 years old. But either way.
We're getting closer.
If we ever see ourselves, we will take a picture.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thanks, everybody. Goodbye. See you next week.